Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Well, a spirited show coming, and I mean it. Mark's fired up, but I may be more fired up for this episode. A lot of screaming going on, and a little disagreement between the hosts at the beginning. We break down some video that you guys have seen about the older gentleman being pushed over by the Buffalo police force, and I disagree with Mark's assessment on that, so you can hear us respectfully have a debate on that.
Should this conversation have happened on the Adam Carolla show, we would have a leader in the clubhouse for rant of the year.
Oh, really?
Wow. Me and Kalen believe so.
Wow. All right, so that's coming. First, you can watch us if you'd like to see us in the flesh, youtube.com/Adam Carolla if you'd like to see what's our reactions as this thing goes on. First, I'll tell you about NetSuite, Oracle, NetSuite, America's ready to get back to work. Oh, are we ever? But how are you going to win in the new economy? You need every advantage. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud-based business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite gives you the visibility to control and manage every penny. Join the 20,000 plus companies who trust NetSuite. Right, Gary?
That's right. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 Actions Businesses Need to Take Now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/doubt. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/doubt, netsuite.com/doubt.
This is Carolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but going to mend to get on. Welcome to the best hour show in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus over there. Good day, Mark, I should say.
Going to say, before we got on the air, we were commenting on the fact that I think we've seen each other every single day.
Well, I'm always happy to see you because I love your energy. I love a motor in a person. It's not the skill set, it's the motor. I don't care if you're a carpenter, if you're an attorney, if you're a garbage man, I don't care. I like seeing guys jog to their truck. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Guy who was just fixing my refrigerator was the same way. He was excellent. I said, I'll pay you whatever you want. I don't care. You're at least excited about replacing the condenser. But by the way, you've been on fire for the last 10 weeks. You understand this? For those who don't know, because I drill down in the weeds, the Adam Carolla show has, you got 1 million downloads on one thing. I checked that Apple list of comedy, and it's like you and Joe Rogan own the top 50 spots. It's the two of you share it all out. Every once in a while, Reasonable Doubt rears its ugly head and then goes back down. But it's basically Carolla and Rogan's universe, and everybody else lives in it.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's an interesting thing, which is, and thank you. I didn't mess around much with like the sort of algorithm of like Twitter. And I could never really tell, well, did something get a lot of retweets because it was funny or it was poignant? I've realized it has to be true. And if you kind of combine true with a little bit of funny, I sent one out a couple days ago. It had almost 5 million views, which is, you know, most of my stuff has 300,000 views or 5. And I always trying to figure what is the difference between 5 million and 300,000, and it was one about CNN last week, and then CNN this week, which probably Gary can find. But the point is the reason it got shared is because it was true versus being funny. You know, if you made a funny knock knock joke, it's not going to get spread. It has to be funny, but mostly true. And Gary will find it, but I can paraphrase.
I mean, there it is.
No, this wasn't that CNN one, but
that wasn't this one. There's another one another CNN one, and there was another one you did, and both of them exploded. I mean, literally exploded.
Well, I'm
me on the other hand, as we're taping this, I just tweeted out a quote because I was so stunned by the quote on this Buffalo police situation. Have you seen this video?
Is it where they push the guy over? Is it that one?
Yeah, well, you may characterize it as push the guy over. That's not what the police union spokesperson said.
Oh.
Gary, there it is. Are we going to stop?
Yes, I'll read it to you. CNN last week, how are we going to stop these sunbathers on California beaches? CNN this week, masses in the streets walking arm in arm. Good for them. Okay.
And look at that. It's 90,000 likes. That's like a Trumpian number. I mean, you get up there in the anti-Trump.
So what was that? It was a 75-year-old gentleman. He was walked toward the police who were sort of coming his direction. And then what?
Correct. And Gary, do you have it? Because I want people to watch it. If you're watching, if you're listening, I'll describe it. But there is a phalanx, one of my favorite words, of what looks to be tactical unit officers walking towards a man who is in pretty good shape for, we now know, 75 years old. He's talking to two of them. One guy reaches over and clearly pushes him down. You take a look. The guy's on the ground. You can immediately see that he's fallen backwards, hit his head on the cement, and is bleeding.
Well, blood coming out of your ear is not a good sign at all. Number one. Number two, he has that concussed thing. If you watch MMA fighters who get knocked out or boxers get knocked out, you'll see their limb. There's a little bit of a palsy in their hands or their feet. There's an electrical system. I, who used to box and who have been hit that way, you literally feel an electric charge. When you get hit in the head,
Like a Charlie horse, except in your head?
No, I'll tell you, it's your body's very weird that way. If you get hit in the back of the head hard enough, you will feel as if your foot is being electrocuted. Like, you will feel weird. The body's electrical system gets all whacked out, and that's where you see sort of the hands clawing up and the palsy and the sort of legs. So that evidently is what happened. Now he walked.
And then look, I'm going to show you one other piece here. Gary, when you play it, right after he hits the cement, one officer appears to try to go to assist him. And what take a look at exactly if he's going, okay, boom, he goes down. Now you'll see an officer right there try to assist him. The guy who's got his hand on the other officer, that's a superior officer there. That's one of the superior who pulls him away. Don't go assist this guy who's lying on the sidewalk. Now, why I found this interesting, Adam, I know we've talked what seems like every day this week, but last week I was telling you when we were discussing the four officers in Minneapolis, I gave you an example of a case that I've had in Hollywood years ago where they were outside of some club in Hollywood. Wait. And one guy punched through one punch, remember? And I told you, the guy fell backwards, hit his head on the pavement, ended up dying, and they ended up arresting three to four guys for murder. Mm-hmm. And one of the theories, they didn't have to investigate, they didn't have to suspend anybody without pay. The police came, they responded, they arrested people for murder. Now, mind you, they said that at the time, the LA County DA's theory was that the guys who didn't throw the punch were just as responsible for the guy who did throw the punch, an intentional act. Interestingly here, not only does this guy, one of the officers push him, but another guy tries to go to his aid and the senior officer pushes the guy who wants to go to his aid away. If those were civilians, they would be in custody, probably $1 million bail, maybe a $500,000 bail. You know what happens in this case? In this case, the two officers, only because there's riots happening across the country, get suspended, not arrested, suspended. without pay, so that we're making some progress, that there, it's not like a Daniel Shaver style situation. But today, and the reason that we went through all this lead up was, all 57 members of the Buffalo Police Riot Squad, as you can see right here, just resigned. Now, did they resign the police department? Oh, no. They just said, we're not going to be in the tactical unit. And why? Because their union said, we're not going to pay your legal fees. And the union said, here's the quote from Commissioner Joseph Grimlaglia. Our position is these officers were simply following orders from Deputy Police Chief Joseph Grimlaglia. Actually, so the Police Benevolent Union President John Evans says, it doesn't specify clear the area of men 50 and under or 15 to 40. They were simply doing their job. I don't know how much contact was made. He did slip, in my estimation. He fell backwards. Okay, John Evans, the Police Benevolent Association president, apparently thinks that was a slip. Somebody slipped and fell. Yeah. So I guess technically that's partially right.
Well, he was helped off balance. I'll put it to you that way. But I'm going to, speaking of pushing, I'm going to push back a little on some of your analysis of this case. Number one, the 75-year-old gentleman was walking toward the line of police guys. So you had a little bit of a situation of these guys were going east and he was coming west. Like, so there was a little bit of a, you know, it's a little difference between a car hitting a telephone pole and another car hitting another car traveling the opposite direction. They had a little bit of coming to each other. Now, he was definitely pushed. My question with the older gentleman is, what was he reaching for on the cop who pushed him? What was his right hand?
He looks like he's got a phone. Doesn't that look like a phone?
Yeah, but what is he doing with it vis-a-vis the guy who pushed him? Like, why is he reaching over to the officer and fiddling around there?
My pushback is this. I'll go back to the civilian analysis. The civilian analysis is, and a prosecutor's have told me that. Oh, that's great. Tell it to a jury. And by the way, we're going to do an elder abuse allegation so that we can enhance your sentence because he was particularly vulnerable as being over whatever age, which this guy clearly is. So therefore, not only is it great bodily injury with a mandatory state prison GBI enhancement, but we're going to tack on an elder abuse on top of it.
All right. I would push back and say I had no way of knowing how old this gentleman was. He was in great shape for a 75-year-old. He appeared to be fit. He came toward me. I didn't come toward him. His right hand went around my belt or my arm. I have a pistol there. I wanted to get him away from me. I pushed him. He lost balance. I stopped to try to help him, but my senior officer said, keep going, and then got on the radio to call for help or a paramedic because these guys ostensibly aren't trained paramedics. There's not much he could have done. Go.
Okay. First of all, it's almost as if a referee on whether it's a blocking foul or a charge. And
right.
The cop clearly, to my mind at this point, was doing a charge. All of that is great. That's a defense. That's an affirmative defense. Because if there was no tape, the officers would have written that he was going for their gun.
Right.
Or they would have written that he tried to slug me and I did it. That's exactly what happened in Minnesota. That's exactly what happens in all of these cases. The only difference and why it seems, you know, I've talked about this before. It seems like it happens more often now. But the reason for that, as long as I've been practicing, cops have always used the same thing. It's either a draw stroke. That was the Daniel Shaver or and they've got experts that will go
draw stroke is we thought you were reaching for a weapon.
Exactly. Right. In this case, he was trying. They're going to say the 75-year-old was reaching for my weapon. They'll justify it that way. The problem has been now in the age of cell phone cameras. It's very similar to what happened in other countries, whether it was Arab Spring, Tiananmen Square, where all of a sudden you can't, in autocratic kind of crackdowns. You can't do that anymore because there is video and people are going to, you know, it's going to be the old expression, you're going to believe me or you're going to believe your eyes. And in this case, there was no reason in the world to have pushed this guy with that kind of force to send him flying backwards, in my humble opinion. I don't care what he was doing. You could have de-escalated it.
I don't agree that he pushed him with a lot of force. I agree that the guy was 75 and feeble. If the guy was 35, it probably wouldn't have been considered a lot of force. I don't think if he would have pushed Gary, Gary would have stumbled and hit his head. But that guy was feeble. That guy's balance was, at 75, it's compromised a little bit. So he pushed him. He pushed him with an amount of force that probably would have been fine for Gary, but not for that guy. My ultimate thing with these, with cops, as I've always said, and again, there may be some pushback, pardon the pun, but.
Why do we keep using pushback on this?
You're allowed,
it's a little, right?
Yeah, you're allowed to do that. But what I would tell my 75-year-old friend is, don't walk at cops and fiddle around with them in this heightened, agitated state. They may do something that is not correct. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, but you know, I do. But at the same time, you know, somebody who's 75. And, you know, it's not that far away from how old I am. You've lived, you've seen all kinds of things. You grew up in America. And I remember as my father was getting, you know, into his 70s, the number of times that a bailiff or a marshal would call me from some courthouse where he just wasn't going to take another minute of some officious person coming at him. And they, it happened at the West Covina courthouse, happened at the Santa Monica courthouse back when they were open for criminal. And he used to do the same thing. He would go zero, his patience level. I think there's an inverse ratio between your patience level as you age with officious people. And if you see all of these guys walking down the street in that direction, I mean, it's the same kind of thing as that iconic picture of the guy in China 31 years ago standing in front of the tanks and say, OK, well, of course, you're going to get run over. You're standing in front of a tank. At a certain point, you know, that's what protest is. And so this guy's protesting, more power to him.
I you know, there's a lot of pardon the pun with the 75-year-old gray area here, like on his head that hit the concrete. But I'm saying I got all the room in the world for bad cops in my brain. This particular case, the guy walked toward them. He kind of initiated. His hand was fumbling around the guy's waist. I don't know what he was fumbling around. I'm not sure what he was trying to. I don't think he was reaching for his gun or anything like that. But his hand was around him. And the guy pushed a guy who then lost his balance and hit his head. This is a little bit of a nothing burger in my world. Now, he whacked his head and blood came out of his ear, and now he's in bad shape, and now it's a big deal. But if he never fell, or he fell and never hit his head, he just bruised his tailbone, then we wouldn't be talking about it. And there's many far more egregious versions of cops brutality, for sure, that I believe we should focus on.
I'll give you this. Now, this, we've talked about this before. If you drive under the influence, remember when that was a hot topic, especially in California, and then they started to punish you, even if nothing happened, if you drove fine, but you got pulled over, you blew over a 0.10. I mean, I remember in the days when it was 0.15, and now it's 0.08. But there would be this kind of no zero tolerance policy. Well, God forbid that you end up getting into an accident and killing somebody.
Wait,
right?
No zero tolerance policy.
Zero tolerance policy. Right. That we moved into the zero tolerance policy. So now you've got this situation when it's a DUI. If you cause injuries, even if you didn't have the mental intent, you get into an accident while in DUI, you can be charged with murder. Now, as we've talked about, even if you're doing something that is an infraction, speeding, they can bootstrap that into a murder charge. I've defended that case. We talked about it a year ago. So the idea that you push somebody, he falls and hits his head on the sidewalk, whether he's 75 or not, eggshell theory to me, causation theory to me, and it's just as bad as if you had used an incredible amount of force. And the cop, I still think, if they're not trained to de-escalate, and part of the reason that this one, I think, resonates so quickly is because he's a white guy who's 75 and he looks like a grandpa. And that kind of fits in with a couple of other of your theories.
Well, the only thing that's going to make this one a tough putt in my mind is the gentleman who is 75's right hand sort of mussing around the hip or belt line area of the cop. That's the only thing where the cop gets to say, I didn't know what he was doing, but I wanted distance between me and him immediately. I didn't know if he was reaching for something. I de-escalated by creating a safe space between he and I using my right hand on his sternum. And Gary, I don't know, is the cop's gun on the right side? Did he have his gun? To me, if that guy's hand is anywhere in the neighborhood of that guy's pistol, then they're not going to get convictions on this guy. But I don't know what he's and whatever his cell phone's in his right hand. But that's the problem. The problem.
If I'm the prosecutor, I convict on that all day long. In fact, to me, that is as egregious as the three officers who they just charged in Minnesota, who were just standing there. Two of which did nothing, or one of the guys, at least arguably in Minnesota, had a knee on his back. But we haven't talked. We talked on ACS about that case. So you might want to. We can probably segue into that because I think there's an interesting discussion. For those who don't know, Keith Ellison took over the prosecution of that case. Keith Ellison is the attorney general of Minnesota, took over from the county attorney, who was the first guy who kind of gave a pronouncement that there was stuff that people didn't know basically before they were charged. And they Ellison upgraded from a third degree murder, which the state of mind is a depraved state of mind, to a second degree murder, which has more of a intent element. And then also filed the complaint against the other three officers on a aid and abet type theory.
Do a first degree, second degree, third degree, and then where do we go? Manslaughter after that?
Yeah, exactly.
Give a quick definition.
Murder itself from manslaughter, the traditional common law definition is they're both homicides. Murder is when it's committed with malice aforethought. Manslaughter is when there's causation. However, there is either no malice or the malice is negated.
You could get manslaughter if you set up some scaffolding for somebody to work on outside of your apartment building and it collapsed and the stucco guy died. You would be on the hook for not correctly or safely setting up the scaffolding, but not on the hook for malice or premeditation.
Correct. And you could do, and there's also in certain jurisdictions like LA, California, there's a misdemeanor manslaughter. And then depending on vehicular manslaughter, things like that. For these purposes, in order to charge the other three officers who they're going to say there was no causation, they're going to say that those officers, number one, had a duty. Number two, didn't do anything to intercede. Number three, aided and abetted. And then you have to go to the officer. The first one, I always forget how to pronounce his name, Chauvin or Chauvin. And he, with his mental state is going to be the key for latching liability onto the three other officers. So first degree would be generally that premeditated and deliberate. Second degree would be a state of mind where it was likely to have happened and there's an intent element. Third degree is kind of a depraved mind, such a deviation from negligence and recklessness that it creates a depraved mind. One of the reasons that the third degree I always thought was problematic in this case is under Minnesota law, depraved mind, you have to show it didn't happen in this one instance. Going back to the DUI, depraved mind would be you get into a car, you're obliterated with alcohol. You don't have the intent to go hurt somebody necessarily, but the fact that you got into the car and drove while that intoxicated, that could be a depraved mind, or what we would call in California a Watson-style implied.
So what are they going to – well, so how do you think this whole thing's going to play out?
Well, I think it's very dangerous. I mean, it was – obviously, it appears that charging the three officers – if you, I don't know how you'd ever measure this, but at least anecdotally or correlative, it appears that as soon as they did that, that the violent part of the protest was diffused, or the air went out of that in terms of violence. So there may have been a calculation that we've got to do something because things are getting out of hand.
Well,
or you could say, you know,
well, if you were, to me, I haven't studied the film closely, but the one officer who appears to be the one who has some Asian descent seemed to have his back to the proceedings and was sort of working on crowd control. And you could argue
that's what it looks like.
You could argue that that guy could hear everything. But if I was representing him, I'd say we had an intense situation and he was back to the crime. His back was literally to the crime, and he was focused on this crowd and whatever danger that could have possessed at that point. I don't know that you're gonna have a hard time with that guy unless there's footage of him sort of turning around and observing.
Well, and I think one of the interesting ways to view this, precisely making the distinguishing factual distinguishment that you are, is if you remember Rodney King, the first time the four officers were acquitted in Simi Valley in state court, then the four officers were prosecuted in federal court. Mm-hmm. Only Stacy Kuhn and the one other officer were convicted in federal court. The other two officers, one his name I think was Timothy and I forget the name of the other, were acquitted. And there was the officers' lawyers made arguments about, well, we were basically deferring to the senior officer, or we were looking at the crowd and not so much us. It was crowd control. So there's always going to be people who are going to, or lawyers who are going to fashion it dependent on the factual situation. But what potentially could happen is that there is this idea of kicking the can down the road. If you end up indicting on a theory that's not going to end up in convictions, if that's the case, what happens if they're acquitted? And there's always going to be, I've never seen a case where the police do not, and the lawyers for the police do not turn up some expert who says, who basically dices it down and kind of slices and dices the video frame by frame to explain, number one, you got to look at it frame by frame. And at the same time, even though this sounds schizophrenic, you've got to analyze that it's in the moment and that officers have to make split second decisions. That's kind of the expert mantra that the cops have survived on.
Would they dare get into Floyd's past? And I don't know that much about it, but
I think they always try to do, and they always try to do that in a way that, look, there's been reports that the officer, Chelvin or Chuvin, whatever his name is, and Floyd worked on various shifts at a club, a local club. If there was some knowledge of that, that I don't know. I haven't seen any reports. I don't know what the client's saying, but they're arguably you could get into that.
Well, I'll give you an example that comes to mind. In rape cases, there's always that part where they go there. You know, well, she's not been such a good girl in the past. You know, she had a lot of boyfriends, and that night she was drinking a lot and hanging around with a lot of, and they sort of besmirch, you know what I mean? They're, and it's a really weird thing that they, it's probably they do less and less these days for good reason.
Well, yeah, because see, in the last 20 years, there's been significant barriers to being able to get that kind of information in. I mean, you know, there's ways to get it in that are relevant. In California, it's 1101 style evidence that usually is used against the defendant. 1101 is a common modus operandi or scheme or plan. And so you saw it in Spectre when it came to violence towards women. You see it in Harvey Weinstein in New York when it came to assaulting of women. And sometimes I've seen it used with what's called reverse 1101. If a woman will make a statement in claiming rape, that you can show or somehow show that she's made that accusation before, you might be able to get into that. It all depends. It's very fact intensive, but there are huge evidentiary hurdles to trying to get into the fact of saying that the woman either asked for it, whether it's by dress or by things of that nature. I mean, that's the law has swung dramatically in the other direction.
But do you believe the defense attorneys for the officers would try to smear Mr. Floyd?
Yeah, in and outside the courtroom. I think absolutely they will. I think there's going to be a concerted effort. I mean, just like you saw with the Buffalo Police Benevolent Union. I don't know what was so benevolent about that union, but they just as you see there, that they're already coming out and staking out a area where they say that the guy slipped and fell and that there really wasn't any pushing. You're going to see the same kind of a thing here where they delve into the guy's background, Floyd's background, and try to do that. I don't think that that's going to get much traction in this particular area.
Well, it seems like a very dangerous, a politically dangerous or societally dangerous angle to go on. You know what I mean?
It's literally a playing with fire.
Gary just said two of the four cops involved were on their first week as Minneapolis cops that we just found out.
One of the two was had not completed his third shift when it happened.
Oh, see, now that's going to be tough. I don't know, or tougher, I guess, because you're going to go, that guy didn't know anything, and he was scared of this senior guy, you know.
He's scared of Grandpa. Right.
Right.
Grandpa.
I'm going to tease this. I was thinking about what you're saying. I was thinking about the OJ trial, and I remember at the time that the judge said it was inadmissible that Nicole Brown Simpson had phone calls to 911 saying he's going to kill me. That he threw that out. And I as a lay person at that point in my, as I was literally a carpenter full time, thought that seems queer to me. Like that seems relevant to me that she was saying he's going to kill me. And now she's saying it from the grave. So I'm curious what you think of it and whether you think that stuff should be admissible. And you can kind of put yourself on both sides of the defense and the prosecution and think about that kind of information. First, I'll tell you about Method Men. It's a fresh approach to grooming. I'm wearing the deodorant right now. It's good. It doesn't smell like deodorant. It's not all that red zone sports stick stuff. The body wash I actually used today as well. It is tested on folks. It's cruelty-free. It's not, they don't do it on animals. The body wash I got is the Sea Surf, and the other one is the Surf and Cedar. So, and the Cypress Scents is the deodorant, actually. It's good.
It smells so good. I'm using this stuff. So, my wife's in love with it.
It smells really good. I don't know what else to say about it. And the deodorant's really good. And you save 15%. Use the code DOUBT when you buy online. methodmen.com. Yeah, why go to the store anymore? methodmen.com. That's methodmen.com. And save the 15%. Use the code DOUBT. All right, so that whole OJ, he's going to kill me, 911 calls, cannot come inside the courtroom. Thoughts?
That was then, this is now. There's been a code section that's been passed since then, and there's also been a challenge to that. And the argument is that originally it doesn't come in because it's something, it's pure hearsay, and hearsay you can't cross-examine. And so if somebody does a phone call, you can't do the cross-examination. And then they did a change in the law, and the change in the law then allows that to come in by saying, well, if it's in a proceeding in which you are being accused of causing the inability of the person to testify, you don't get to be rewarded for that. The problem is with that, and I've actually had this case in a try-to-murder case 10 years ago where this came to play. In fact, the case got quite a bit of attention at the time that I was trying it. When that comes in, we found evidence that the person who was on the 911 call saying he's going to kill me, or if something happens, he's going to kill me. We found evidence that that was a setup, and that that was a setup for wholly different reasons. So then there's a question of reliability, and the ruling, in, at least in that case, was, well, that's fine. You found the evidence. Let the jury decide. They're the finders of fact. And so that's the conundrum. Do you allow something in that you can't cross-examine, which is a violation of your right to confrontation, or do you allow it in, going to weight as opposed to admissibility, and say, well, it's up to the defense. If you think that there's some indicia of unreliability, then you get to show that to the jury.
I don't know why I was laughing, thinking to myself, you know, I should call 911 and announce I'm never going to kill my wife, just so it's on record. So if we find Lynette in the bathtub at some point, it's on record. But then it just made me think of, I think it was Susan Rice, who was the Obama administration attorney general, who went back and wrote herself an email 2 weeks after a meeting.
She was the ambassador, I believe, to the UN.
No, not that.
She was in.
Not her. Not
the one who did the.
Not the ambassador. I think it may have been Susan Rice.
She was the national security advisor.
I think it was
advisor.
Susan Rice.
Yeah.
National security advisor.
Right.
And she wrote the email to herself when Comey came to the White House to say that they had an issue with Flynn, and Obama said, buy the book, or go buy the book.
How does that strike you as an attorney? So 2 weeks after the meeting, she went and wrote herself an email about the meeting saying he said, buy the book three times. Does that feel to you like she is just trying to capture the meeting, or is she knowing that at some point someone's going to go through her? Is she trying to memorialize the meeting, or does she know someone's going to get into her computer at some point, possibly, and she wants this on record?
Well, it's a very good question, because there's various evidentiary basis upon which you could try to get something like that in. If she tried to get it in a proceeding, the argument would be is it's inadmissible because it's self-serving hearsay, meaning she created it after the fact. She knew that there was some kind of an investigation. It was created in contemplation of that, or to be self-serving. If there was something seized, and she wanted, depending on how you would interpret it, you could argue that if it was, for instance, there's a doctrine called the fresh complaint doctrine. If somebody makes a fresh complaint at some or near in time to when you have supposedly been sexually assaulted, there is going to be a balancing as to whether or not that's admissible, whether you can let in a witness who says, usually it's like a mother or a girlfriend, who's going to say, yeah, she told me about it, but she didn't want to make a police report at the time because she was worried about this, that, or the other thing. Does that witness come in? Because that would traditionally be outlawed because it's hearsay. And so there's always going to be a very fact-intensive, fact-driven analysis before a judge lets it in and says, I'm going to let the finder of fact, a jury or a court,
but
listen
to
it.
What do you think her motivation for that email was?
I think clearly that she knew that this was a very unusual situation. You have an incoming administration. You have somebody who conceivably is going to be at the helm of the National Security Office. You have the head of the FBI present, and they are bringing it to the attention of the commander in chief. I mean, you couldn't tick off more boxes of this is not your run of the mill briefing. This is something that that could spin out in one way or another. And I think she was trying to stake out what she heard and in real time. Otherwise, I don't really understand why she would have been documenting it, except if she was worried that after the fact, somebody was going to try to misinterpret.
Why 15?
From her standpoint.
Why 15 days after the meeting?
I was, that struck me as well. And I don't know if that was because there were contemporaneous notes and that was the first time she reduced them to, you know, what I would call writing. I mean, I do that, for instance, I will do post-it notes sometimes, or I'll do a audio memo or something like that. And then later on, I'll circle back and then do a memo to file. So I don't know. I'd have to know more facts about that. And trust me, if somebody were to try to admit that, for instance, if somebody were to prosecute Comey at some point and they were trying to, and Comey testified to something and she was then called as a witness and they wanted to use that either to refresh her recollection or if she invoked and they wanted to use that, you'd have to show what the provenance was, what the origin was before a judge would let that in. Let in that email, exactly.
So Gary told me before the show that there was some video that he was dying to show me. And
okay, I saw this last night. I think I know that we talk to each other what seems like every day. I saw this last night, and I sent it to Gary almost immediately. I tried to video it on my TV. I said, I need to see Adam's face when he watches this and hear it.
The 11th Hour with Brian Williams. All right, well, Gary's going to queue it up.
Back with us again tonight is Dr. Vin Gupta. He's an ER doc specializing in these kinds of illnesses, also an affiliate assistant professor with the University of Washington Department of Health Metric Sciences. Well, Doc, here's the thing. It takes a fierce urgency to march all day in Washington, D.C., through a line of thunderstorms, and then stand in Lafayette Park all night. Social justice has trumped social distancing. We've seen it every night on our broadcast. We know it's happening. In your line of work, do you now wait 2 weeks? Because I also read that for the top 25 coronavirus cities, all of them have had outdoor protests.
Brian, good to see you. And you're touching on an important question and something that people have picked up on. How can somebody, in my case, for example, advocate a strict lockdown of everybody and the economic catastrophe that resulted, and then also say it's okay to go protest? Well, here's the thing, Brian. We as doctors, as nurses, as respiratory therapists, what we value more than anything else is prioritizing risks by how deadly they are. And that's why all of us are saying it's okay to protest, because the social inequities propagated by elements in our law enforcement institutions, by our healthcare system writ large, are simply put deadlier to the most vulnerable in America than the coronaviruses. The statistics bear that out. Poverty alone causes at least 300,000 deaths a year.
Hold on a second. If I hear another fucking talking hole on TV talk about the statistics bearing it out, or, you know, this nut job who's running, Dr. Barbara Ferrer, who seems like an escaped mental patient, somebody should be chasing her with a fucking butterfly net. If I hear another nut job explain to me about science and the stats and the numbers, and then go off about how racist the coronavirus is, or about how we can't lay down on the beach, do not preface that with science. Do not preface it with the numbers or with the data. It's embarrassing that you would even fucking say that. So am I hearing him right? He's saying that even though, well, 10 minutes ago, we all had to die in our apartments because this was a firsthand killer, right? Now,
right. That's why this is my version of you breaking down the tape. Keep going, Gary.
Does he keep going?
Make sure that, oh yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is why Elvis kept a gun next to him when he watched TV. so he could shoot the fucking TV set. Here we go.
America than the coronaviruses. The statistics bear that out. Poverty alone causes at least 300,000 deaths a year in America. And we know who bears the brunt of poverty across racial lines. So that's why we're saying it's okay to protest.
Oh, hold on a second.
Do so carefully.
Stop it, Gary. You know how you ensure poverty for the most vulnerable people of our society? You lock them in their fucking apartments for 3 months, you fucking quack. You take their small businesses and you burn them and you loot them. You make sure that whatever it is they started, they can never get back to. That's how you ensure poverty. The folks who work at the hospital like you, the folks that work for MSNBC like Brian, they're getting paid. Everyone in the news groups are getting paid. All the politicians are getting paid. The folks you said couldn't see the light of day for 3 months, those are the people that are becoming more impoverished. So anyway, thank you, hero. Keep going, Gary.
There's at least 300,000 deaths a year in America. And we know who bears the brunt of poverty across racial lines. So that's why we're saying it's okay to protest, but do so carefully. Do so outdoors, ideally with a mask. Keep infection control at the top of your mind. But let's tackle the deadlier risk here, and that social injustice, as you just outlined.
So the cause of survival in 2020 against all the forces that might be arrayed against several different communities, those living in poverty, various communities of color in this country, are so vast and so grave that we assume a risk by going out, picking up a sign, and being next to people.
Hold on a second. Brian,
of course we do.
This guy, why do you have to unpack this duffel bag of lunacy that this guy just brought to the fucking jamboree? That's way beneath you, Brian. You explained that you got some breaking news or maybe some looting going downtown and you fucking cut the guy off. There's no reason to unpack his nutty sack. You can't make heads or tails of this.
I don't understand why this is their premier news show, maybe next to Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. If you're going to examine an issue in an intelligent way, let's talk. I can think of four other things that would be topical and make a lot more sense. Let's talk about qualified immunity, which now all of a sudden is the rage. Look at all the bills that are being introduced in Congress to strip qualified immunity. Look at the cases working their way up to the U.S. Supreme Court to strip officers of qualified immunity. Talk about DAs, why the symbiotic relationship between DAs and the police, where DAs never charge, and talk about the protests at or the police chief here in L.A. who made some of the most idiotic statements you could ever see, or talk about Mayor Garcetti, whose solution to the situation is defunding the police as people are fleeing out of downtown L.A. I mean, there's so many other real legit issues. And this, this to me is kind of the same as the guy when they put on also on MSNBC and they were mocking him, the lieutenant governor of Texas, who was saying, I want to die so my grandkids can live. He was getting mocked. And isn't this the same argument, or am I missing something?
This guy's an idiot. Look, he went, and Gary, I will explain. I'll explain what is happening. I'll explain the phenomenon. Gary, you can find that clip I brought into ACS about Dr. Barbara explaining that she's worried about the beach and she's worried about the boardwalk. And okay, Jesus fucking Christ. Here's what's going on. Here's the phenomenon. We are not in the mode anymore, either from a micro standpoint or a macro standpoint, of saying, I may have been wrong about this, that, or the other. We're now, it's circle the wagons in a full defense of everything that's ever been announced, done, a policy, an expert who has spoken. So what's happening in this particular case is many people in the news and many individuals we know, when they heard about this coronavirus, they went, as I said on ACS, they went pot committed. They took all of their scary chips and they pushed it right to the center of the table. I threw in a couple of $10 chips just to see what kind of hand I would get dealt, just not to get up and leave the table. But I wanted to hear more. Everyone else went pot committed. Garcetti went pot committed. This jerk went pot committed. All the news anchors went pot committed. All the ladies from The View went pot committed. 10 minutes ago, they were yelling at the woman in Dallas who wanted to reopen her salon. You're going to hurt people. What are you doing? You're being selfish. They all pot committed. Garcetti pot committed. Newsom got pot. They all pot. And guess what? Fucking snake eyes. They got, I know I'm mixing my gambling metaphors, but they got a fucking, they got a pair of twos, seven high. They got nothing. They got no fucking hand dealt to them. And they don't want to, they don't want to have to leave the casino poor. So they're going to try to see if they can get those chips back by discussing, well, we're in phase four of the rollout. You may go to, you can go to the beach. You have to be in the wet sand, not the dry sand. And if you pass a lifeguard station, you have to circle it twice and yell, Ollie, Ollie, oxen free. Because I know what I'm doing. You understand? I need to give you the illusion of knowing what you're doing. You assholes made a mistake. You locked down too early, too often. You didn't do what you should have done, which is focus on the elderly and focus on the nursing homes. Instead, you put healthy people for the first time ever in quarantine. You made a mistake and you're not admitting it. And this is exactly what's going on. Oh, these guys, these irresponsible folks on Daytona Beach for spring break. Or what about the animals at the Ozark pool party? Look at them. They're putting all of us in danger. Okay, great. Where's the follow-up story? We've done the experiment. We've done it. We've opened up. I was in Texas 3 weeks ago. It's done. It's a done deal. You pot committed. You shouldn't have done it. You should have done it slowly. You should have done what me, you, and Drew, and other people have been on this planet longer than 10 minutes did, which is these guys are fear merchants. I need to hear incrementally what's going on. Some of my earliest inklings were, oh, you're telling me people died, but you won't tell me their age. You won't tell me how old they were. Why are you telling me a male over 60 died? Why can't I have his age? I don't need his name. I need his age. You won't tell. Think about how long this whole nursing home information took to come out. For the first 2 months, we didn't hear anything about nursing homes. It was just another, we have another body as we march toward a grim milestone of whatever the arbitrary number is. These people, I don't know if they were deceiving us purposely, but they certainly were deceiving us. All their prognostications were off. I've always said it. Here's how politicians work. When it comes to the bullet train, your estimates are very low. Very low. But when it comes to death from coronavirus, they're exceedingly high. Why is that? Why are you off so high on one thing and so low on the other? I think there's a method to their madness. I think they wanted us scared and locked down. And this Ferrer chick is bat. She needs to live in a belfry. Yes. Sorry.
Have you, Gary, do you know how much she gets paid a year?
Oh, my God. She's being.
Oh, my God. You Google it while I say something. Do you know that she's also. Do you assume that she, as the county health director, whatever her position is, you would assume she's a medical doctor, correct?
Yeah, I know. I know. She's like a counselor.
Yeah, she's not a medical doctor. And when you hear how much she gets paid a year, your head will explode.
$413,000.
Yeah.
Jesus, goddamn Christ.
$413,000.
For misleading Los Angeles?
So next time you pay your county property taxes, remember that when they shut you down because she, who is not a medical doctor, and by the way, I didn't file, this is one of the lawsuits I didn't file, but we talked internally and with and I haven't asked his permission to reveal his name, but somebody who is a friend of the show, we talked where there are code sections that require that you have a medical doctor, but they've done kind of a sleight of hand so that this position can be filled by a non-medical doctor. And because we like the way that she talks to the public, we've decided to pay her $413,000, which I believe last time I looked is more than the commander in chief, the president of the United States, gets by statute.
Absolutely.
More than the governor, clearly.
Absolutely. Governor. And if you watch CNN, you'll learn, because they repeated ad nauseum, that the president has donated his entire salary and doesn't collect that money. Oh, wait a minute. I haven't heard much talk about that.
Well, and if you, but one of the things you'll also learn is CNN had their highest ratings in I don't know how
of
long
course.
In May.
Of course.
So there, it's all you need to know. So if it's not riots, it's Corona. And if it's not Corona, it's riots.
Let's see what Dr. Dingbat had to say about her concerns vis-a-vis the coronavirus as of this is about 3 days old, Mark.
Obviously, you know, when I look and I see people on the beach that are really close together without face coverings, or people on a boardwalk that are really close together without face coverings, or people that are peacefully protesting without their face coverings, I'm going to be worried.
All right.
And you should be worried.
I should be worried too, you nut job. I'm worried. I should be worried about people on the beach because you have reams of data suggesting that people on the beach are vulnerable. How about the fucking footage of Daytona Beach that's 3 months old now, where people are chicken fighting and doing keg stands by the thousands? What about? I should be worried too about the beach. By the way, is this the opposite of medical advice? You have zero transmission on the beach.
Right. And why does she give three examples of people outside when I think how many times has Drew said that there's only one documented case, and even that we're not sure about, of outdoor transmission? We know that indoor transmission is, if there is transmission, is the most risky because you need the viral load and it's got to be over a prolonged period of time. She's not worried about people going into markets. She's not worried about people going into small confined spaces. She's worried about people being outside on the beach.
And the boardwalk for folks who are in Atlantic City but like to keep in touch with what's going on in the LA area. She's concerned about the boardwalk. She's concerned about the beach. She's concerned about peaceful protests. She's not concerned about looting, rioting, or fighting with cops, which I feel there's more contact with. I like that she had to slide peaceful in there.
Well, I have a question. Why didn't she say we're concerned about assisted living centers, where up until exactly 4 weeks ago, we still allowed communal dining? We're concerned about prisons and jails, and we're concerned about meat processing plants. Wouldn't that be, at least to a layman or you and me, aren't those the three places where we should be worried or concerned about?
I would say if you are starting your press conference and you're going to give us your list of concerns in order of importance, I imply that because that's normally how people speak when they have a field of expertise and they're giving a press conference. For you to get out of the gate with the place with zero statistical evidence of any spread of the disease we're speaking of, that is a bad look. You should probably not discuss the one place that nobody has ever had the disease, has got it or transmitted from statistically that we're aware of thus far. And my belief is that she is covering for the powers that be, and she's doing this thing where she is going to build a time machine so they can go back and be correct. Obviously, the beach should have never been shut down. That was a mistake. That was a way overreach of authority on the governor and the mayors. that was a huge overreach. By the way, Orange County never listened, and their beach is open, and nothing is happening, and they have an economy. Fine. You made a mistake by closing down the beach. You don't want to admit to your incompetence and your power grabbing and your overreach, so she goes out there and starts with the beach, that she's still really concerned about it, thus making them retroactively correct for shutting the beach down, which they're not correct. There's an agenda. There has to be an agenda. She is either stupid or liar. If she is actually concerned about the beach, she needs to be removed from her position. She's incompetent. If, in fact, she isn't concerned about the beach, but she's bringing the beach up in order to justify what her bosses have been doing to the taxpayers, then she needs to be removed for being their puppet and lying to us.
Well, and there's also another, you know, part of what people kept saying was that we need to have information. I remember early on during this, it was a drumbeat. We need to be transparent. We need to have information. That's why we do briefings. That's why we have why so many people are turning into that. Well, I think that you can tie the lockdown. I don't think that this is a stretch in the least. I think you can tie the lockdown. I think you can tie the misinformation campaign to the violence, the looting, and things of that nature, because I think that at a certain point, violence and looting, as these protest signs will tell you, are the language of the unheard. It could also be the language of the misled, because yes, at a certain point, if you are challenging authority or trying to revolt, by definition, you're casting stones, metaphorically, against authority. If the authority for 3 months has been, or 2.5 months, has been lying to you, and it finally occurs to you that they've been lying to you, and they don't want to own up to it, and then the next thing you do is you hear another bromide or platitude, and I used it the other day, your mayor platypus. There is a certain reckoning. I mean, if you go all in, if you're, you know, yesterday Garcetti finally lifted the curfew. Why did he lift the curfew? For the same reason that Newsom did. We mentioned this 3 weeks ago. As soon as the sheriffs of individual counties started saying, no, we're not going to enforce this order, there was a chink in the armor. And right, that happened with a sheriff up north. Then the sheriff in Orange County said, I'm not arresting people for violating the order because this makes no sense. Then I think it was Sonoma. Then yesterday I watched this domino happen where the sheriff, Villanueva, here in LA County said, I'm not enforcing the curfew. Within, I swear, and mind you, this is a guy who is currently at odds with the Board of Supervisors, and I understand why he's at odds. I mean, you know, they're, you know, he's got some of his own issues, blah, blah, blah. But the minute he said he wasn't enforcing it, what did the board do? The board says, okay, we're not having a curfew. Then what did brave Mayor Garcetti Platypus do? He says, thank you so much. Everybody's doing such a great job. I'm not going to enforce the curfew anymore. And it's like, hello, what? Is leadership follow the frog, or is leadership getting out there and, as you say, owning your mistakes, saying the science now is without question that what we were telling you early on is no longer the case, so we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But there's no sense to it. I filed a lawsuit 2 days ago. Hotels are open in New York, but restaurants, dine-in, are not. In California, mind you, that's the hot spot. California hotels are closed, but restaurants are open. So you explain to me why hotels that are outside without elevators, the Palm Springs, by the way, who can socially distance, are closed, yet I can walk 40 feet to Mr. Lyon's steakhouse, which is enclosed, and I can sit for hours in close quarters and have a meal where I can get a viral load, if you believe that that's how it's transmitted, but I can't go lie out in a pool where nobody's going to be within 35 or 40 feet of me. Once you tear down any kind of semblance of rationality amongst the governing, you can't expect the governed to just be to accept the social contract anymore.
I completely,
and that's why Yeah.
I agree. You put a fucking stoplight up at the end of everyone's driveway and see how long it takes for them to run a red light because it wasn't necessary. And to put a little finer point on your point, which is, and there's no way to measure it, but you keeping everyone locked down for an unnecessary amount of time mixed with a situation like we had in Minnesota definitely added creatine to that athlete. Now, there would have been some rioting and some looting and some protest. There would have been some amount. We'll never know how much. But my definite thought is you turned it from a 4 or 5 into an 11 by having everyone burst out into the streets after feeling like they were under the thumb of the government for 3 months. And that's why you have to be careful, because you don't know the timing of life. You don't know that there was going to be this situation right in the middle of this lockdown. And I think about when I talked to a prison guard once, and I said, I don't like conjugal visits. I don't like Tex Watson getting laid in prison. That's not the way I roll. And he looked at me and he said, no, it's good because it kind of, the guys can blow off steam. You know, it keeps them kind of whatever. And I realized, okay, you don't want a prison riot, but you let the guys get laid every once in a while and you don't have a prison riot. Well, we didn't get a conjugal visit. We just got locked in our cell for 3 months. And at some point, the doors came flinging open and we had a riot. That's what you just saw.
And right. And, you know, I think, frankly, you know, you can say whatever, and buildings of mine were victimized. Am I angry and out of my head? No, I actually am not, because I understand it. Society is kind of a fragile thing. I mean, right. It really is. And when you incite people and when you do things, I've said it, Adam, probably 40 times. You're tired of listening to me. The criminal justice system is so fucked up in this country. It is so beyond belief fucked up. I don't even know how to explain the frustration when you go into a court and you listen to the same kind of idiotic statements out of prosecutors, or you hear judges who have their finger up in the wind to see which way the wind is blowing. And I get it. I've said for years, I mean, I sit in the courthouse. You could sit. I remember you and I talked about this years ago. You could sit in the criminal courts building and watch what a judge friend of mine once called, back in the days when Coke was a big deal and crack was a big deal, he used to call that the parking ticket of Superior Court. In fact, I think it was Eric Younger, the former attorney general's son. And he would sit in the Pasadena court, and that's all you would see. And you would say, and it was always, that was the issue. That was the thing we were going to focus on. And you just create this revolving door of hypocrisy. And so people see it writ large, and it was across society this time, and it didn't work. It absolutely didn't work. People saw it for what it was.
Last question. Last time we spoke, there was some possible breaking news in terms of a video, and you and Ben, Boring Cop, were kind of going back and forth about maybe the morality of dropping said video on a society that's coming undone at the seams. Any updates?
We're still arm wrestling over it. Boring Cop and I are having we're at loggerheads. So if there's a decision made, we'll do a bonus episode next week.
Please. All right. Tommy John, trying to find that perfect Father's Day gift. Please. Tommy John, man, most breathable. The best underwear ever. I'm wearing mine right now. I'm actually wearing the Tommy John t-shirt, undershirt as well, and the underwear. The loungewear is unbelievable. It is so comfortable and so soft. They got tees and polos as well. And for Father's Day, they got a deal, 25% off site-wide, including gift sets. You can order from your phone and go right to Dad's door, direct to Dad's door. Order before June 17th, ensure arrival before Father's Day. Of course, it's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. This stuff is the best. Once you go Tommy John, you don't go back, right, Gary?
That's right. Tommy John has the perfect gift for all the dads in your life. Deliver comfort to dad's door with 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 25% off site-wide. See site for details.
All right, I'm going to be at Zany's in Nashville doing stand-up and a live podcast. Two shows, two nights, Friday and Saturday, June 12th and 13th. So come say hi there. And then Tempe Improv, July 3rd and 4th as well. Go to amcarolla.com for all the stand-up dates, because there's a bunch of them on there now. And I'm your emotional support animal. My new book, I Pull No Punches, and it is very timely, and that's available for pre-order as we speak. It's coming out in about a week or so. What do you got, Mark?
I've got, in New York, we've got the Capri Hotel, which is now open for business, but the restaurant is not. And in the V Palm Springs, the restaurant is open, but the hotel is not. And if you come downtown LA, I just applied for Mayor Garcetti's LA Alfresco permit, which means I can serve outdoors. So I've applied for Lebanon Alley, which is in the back. I'm going to hire Dr. Alien as the maitre d', and we're going to set up tables in Lebanon Alley. So come down to Engine Company 28 over the weekend. Say hi to Dr. Alien, the maitre d'.
And until next time, it's Adam Kroll from Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.